Good morning. You're listening to Neon Eden on KUNV 91.5. I'm your host, Andrew Dellman with the Las Vegas Sun. Today, we're talking labor, and specifically, organized labor in Las Vegas. Joining us now is Danny Thompson, the head of the Nevada State AFL-CIO. Later in the show, co-host Tovin LaPan will join us to chat with Las Vegas Sun reporter Ed Kaminda, business and labor reporter at the Sun. Danny, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So here you're at a convention here in Las Vegas. What's going on?
This is our annual 57th annual constitutional convention that we hold every year. We alternate it between Northern Nevada and Southern Nevada. This year, we're in Las Vegas.
So, and Danny, you've been involved in organized labor for a long time, for really your whole adult life. And you know, given that the conference is going on now, what would you say is the state of the labor movement today compared to when you started working here in the Las Vegas Valley? Was it in the 1970s?
Yeah, I mean, the labor in Nevada is very strong. I mean, Las Vegas has always been a union town. I think, in fact, Clark County has one of the highest union densities in America. You know, we're doing very well here.
Well, why is that? Why is Las Vegas a union town?
You know, it always has been, quite honestly. You know, I can remember back in the day when all the restaurants were even organized by the culinary union. You know, the culinary has led the way, and we have a strong service sector. And the building trades unions, all 18 of them have been very well organized and represented in the area. And so it's just been that's the way it's pretty much always been.
And now I know certainly with the culinary, we had record numbers of folks attending or coming to Vegas last year, but it's no secret that Vegas has gotten hit hard in the recession and housing crisis. And some unions have just lost members. People have lost jobs. What's going on in the labor movement now? What are unions doing to broaden their appeal, recruit new members?
Well, you know, we're constantly organizing, and I think, you know, certainly the culinary, that's certainly their strength. They are an organizing machine. One of the things we're doing at this convention here is sharing organizing tactics and stories, and we'll be doing organizing workshops to help unions who aren't as good at it as the culinary is. But, you know, I think we're reflective of the economy in Nevada, and Nevada's economy it went through some tough times. I think, you know, I was born here. It's the toughest times I can remember. You know, we went from building the largest privately funded job in the world to construction literally just dropping off the face of the data reports when you looked at the categories of employment. I think that's the biggest downturn in our economy was when, you know, when the housing bubble popped here, which inevitably it was going to. Then construction stopped. And if you consider that construction was the third largest industry in Nevada, it had a profound impact and still does to this day. Now, you know, we're seeing things come back. We're seeing, we're starting to see some, you know, building starts. We're starting seeing some residential building in Southern Nevada and Northern Nevada. And, you know, that's going to be good for everybody. Certainly going to be good for the economy and working families.
Yeah, and I know a lot of those folks have been looking for work for a while now, especially in the building trades. Just given the economy, what would your pitch be sort of to a young person, maybe someone in high school or at CSN, when you talk about organized labor?
Well, if you want a decent living with good health care and, you know, the American dream, that's the pathway to it. And I mean, that's been the success of the culinary union, where a maid can own a house and drive her own car and live a decent life with health care and with the opportunity to have a decent retirement. You know, I don't know where this country's heading, but, you know, it seems that the middle class have been cut out of everything. And, you know, if you cut them out, you know, in effect, we created the middle class. We are the middle class. And so if you cut out the middle class, you're only going to have those very rich people and those with nothing. And so, you know, that's what we sell is a decent living with decent pay and decent benefits.
And, you know, I've heard a lot of talk in politics and in folks in economic development who say, you know, Las Vegas has really got to diversify its economy. It's got to have a new 21st century economy. I know you just mentioned the example of the maid who can, you know, own her own house, drive her own car. But if we're talking about a new type of economy, different types of jobs, how does the middle class, how does labor fit into that picture?
Well, there's no question. There's absolutely no question that, you know, I've been this year, Andrew, is my 32nd year in the Nevada legislature, both serving as a state assemblyman and as the chief lobbyist for the past 22 years for the AFL-CIO. There's no question that we have to diversify the economy. And I think that, you know, every study that I've seen in that time, both elected and unelected, said that you don't diversify the economy unless you improve the educational system in the state. And, you know, that's not me saying that. That's like Price Waterhouse. That's every report that's ever been done. And so, you know, if there's ever hope, because it's actually laughable when you talk about attracting the new, you know, high-tech jobs of the future when we have the lowest graduation rate in the nation. I mean, it's a huge problem that has been identified from, you know, 30 years ago if you want to diversify your economy. Because right now, you know, we're dependent on tourism and mining. And, you know, there's not much mining in Clark County. It's all northern Nevada, which is a significant segment of their economic development. But in the southern Nevada, it's all tourism for the most part. And it's gaming and tourism. And so, you know, if we're ever going to diversify our economy and create those kind of jobs for the 21st century, then we need to improve our educational system in the state.
Now, I know, just on that note, I know it's sort of been the teachers union here who has been pressing forward on this education initiative, the 2% business margins tax that voters will vote on in 2014, which would bring a lot of money, almost $1 billion, into the education system. But Danny, you've talked a lot about education in your position as the head of the state AFL-CIO. What's your take on this initiative?
There's no question that education in Nevada is underfunded. You know, you get what you pay for in that field. And, you know, we haven't paid for it, you know, in my memory, to the national average. I don't remember us ever, you know, I remember bills to try to get us to the bills introduced at the legislature to try to get us to pay for the national average or pay to the national average. And we've not done that. I can remember, in fact, today in Clark County, you know, if you go to the average elementary school, those kids don't get books. They get, at least when my kids were in elementary school here, they got copies of worksheets out of a book, probably in violation of a copyright law, I would imagine. We're going to have to fix that as the community. We have to fix that, and then I think these other opportunities will present themselves to us. And when you do that, and other industries want to come here, then, you know, that creates opportunities to build the facilities that they're going to be housed in. It creates to build the opportunities to build the houses that the people will live in, the schools, and, you know, the other businesses that will spring up as a result of those wanting to be here.
So you see this just really down the road as something that could help organize labor? I mean, is that?
I think anytime you grow the community, it helps us because we're very strong here, and, you know, our intent is to grow with the community. And you know, problem here being that, you know, there's not been that kind of growth that we've seen in other places. You know, where they do value education more than the state does. Now, I have to tell you, the legislature did a good job this session with what they had, what they could get. But, you know, with a 2/3 majority vote to pass any tax or fee, I mean, you don't have the majority controlling the situation. With a 2/3 vote, what you have is the minority controlling the majority. And so this is a huge problem, I think, that everyone recognizes, and everyone will tell you that we need to do more. It just comes down to when it comes time to push that button on doing more, that it gets all fuzzy. And but I think as a community, if we're ever going to grow and diversify, that's something we need to do.
Now, Danny, you mentioned several times now the Nevada legislature, and of course you also said you were a state assemblyman back in the 80s. And of course unions have been involved in politics for decades. And at the conference today, you'll host Senator Harry Reid and Congressman Stephen Horsford, among others. Why are unions, why is organized labor so involved in the political process? What do you gain from that?
Well, you know, in any in whether it's the city council, you know, the county commission, the state legislature, Congress, I mean, the decisions that those people make affect us all. And certainly for us, those decisions are impacting our members greatly. I mean, the Affordable Care Act is a prime example. We were told if we supported the Affordable Care Act that our Taft-Hartley funds would be left intact. And if you had
those Taft-Hartley plans are the union health plans, right?
Union health plans that are not for profit. We don't make a profit on those. It's just we try to provide the best service for the best cost to the people who are in the fund, their joint labor management trust funds. That we were told that, you know, if you had a health insurance that you liked, it would be left alone. Well, it hasn't been left alone. And in fact, you know, this equity issue is huge for us, and that, you know, the money that will be collected to basically pay for the system will be collected on us to the tune of $63 per person in the fund. And then, you know, we don't qualify for any of the subsidies that a private insurance company would qualify. So, you know, we're putting in a situation where it's going to be tough to compete in that realm with for-profit companies.
Right, and you're kind of echoing comments here that your counterpart in the Culinary Local 226, the head over there, Dee Thompson, had some pretty harsh words to say about Obamacare, saying it basically creates a, quote, perverse incentive to dump workers onto the health insurance exchanges. And later, Senator Reid basically said that Dee was exaggerating there. Where do you come down on that as someone who had initially supported Obamacare?
Well, you know, if you look at the penalties for not providing a $2,000 penalty versus a cost, I can tell you what it cost for me to insure the people that were in our fund, and, you know, anywhere from $10,000 to $18,000, depending on the plan, to provide the health insurance per year. And then if the fine is a $2,000 fine, I mean, even if it's a $10,000 plan, you do the math on that, that becomes a business decision. And so I don't think there's any question that it's going to create those kind of problems. The other thing that I think that it will create is, you know, if you, or the other potential is that if you have part-time employees, then this thing doesn't apply to you. Well, you know, I can only tell you what we've seen in other industries where, you know, if somebody wants to get out of, you know, full-time benefits, they move people to part-time. And so one of our concerns is then that, you know, people will be moved to a part-time basis to try to avoid, you know, coming under this law.
Now, when folks hear some of the complaints about the Taft-Hartley union plans being affected possibly, or collective bargaining agreements that when they hear that folks are in unions are getting a raise, some of them think, well, why not me? What about me? The folks who aren't in organized labor. How do you reach out to those workers who are also part of the middle class, who are also working and trying to earn a living wage?
Well, union members make more money than people who aren't union members, and that's because we have the right to collectively bargain. And I don't think there's a more glaring example than, you know, if you look at, state workers who have no collective bargaining rights, they have no ability to strike, they have no ability to get a pay raise, and in fact, they're reduced to collective begging. I mean, and you saw some of the things at this past legislative session where, you know, their deductibles for their health insurance was $4,000 an individual. I mean, that's not insurance. That's like some catastrophic plan that, you know, doesn't exist anymore.
Right. You have to pay $4,000 out of your own pocket
before
you start getting any benefits.
Right? Yeah, per individual. And so, I mean, that's really not insurance. And I, you know, that's a result of them not having the ability to sit down as a group and say, hey, this has to be reasonable. I mean, you know, we had in the past had to make special raises to the highway patrol because their pay is so out of line with other law enforcement in Nevada. You know, we couldn't keep people. In the case of OSHA inspectors, you know, the state had become a training ground for private industry, and that, you know, we get these guys and ladies that come and apply, and we send them to school to become a certified OSHA inspector, only to find out that the day they get their certification, they leave because they can double their salary in the private industry. And I mean, you can't run a business that way, right? I mean, you couldn't compete with a business that way, nor can the state. And so, Nevada's OSHA is a state plan. And I remember as a legislator when we took and created the state plan, but we had to meet the minimum guidelines of the federal government. And so at any time, the federal government could come back and take over our plan if we didn't comply with the minimum standards. You know, we had a scathing report from federal OSHA about, you know, when we had all those deaths on the strip during the building boom.
Right, a few years ago.
Do you remember that? And, yeah. And one of the things that they said in this report was, you don't have qualified OSHA inspectors. Well, our OSHA inspectors, we couldn't keep them. I mean, you would train them, and they would quit as soon as they become certified and go to work anywhere for double the money. And
right.
So,
Danny, you know the local government workers here, they make more money than the state workers.
Yes.
So, and I guess we're almost out of time here, but just I guess I wanted to just ask you kind of what's next for unions? What's going to be coming up in the labor movement here that we can look at in the next year? What can workers look forward to?
Well, we are going to be very active politically. This year, this is our constitutional convention where we set our policies and guidelines for the organization for the coming year. And then, in April, in January, we'll start our interviewing process for the upcoming elections. We're going to take a very active role in the elections, and we're going to take a very active role in fighting for workers' rights. And, one of the things we want to see fixed, don't misunderstand, Andrew, we don't want to do away with Obamacare. We want to fix it. We want equality with the private insurance companies, for-profit insurance companies. So we're going to continue to fight those kind of battles, and we're going to continue to fight to create jobs in the community that we live in and in the state of Nevada.
All right, Danny. Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us this morning. And again, that's Danny Thompson, the head of the Nevada State AFL-CIO, joining us from the AFL-CIO convention here in Las Vegas.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. We're talking to Ed Comenda, Las Vegas Sun reporter, covers business and labor. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
So we spoke a little while ago to Danny Thompson, the head of the AFL-CIO in the state of Nevada. They're having their convention here talking about the labor movement in Nevada. That's something you've covered for a while here. How do you see the state of the labor movement in Nevada?
Well, my focus has been on the culinary, which is the biggest labor union in the state. And the micro focus has been their battle with the Cosmopolitan, which to me represents a fight to stay relevant on the Las Vegas Strip. They've had workers there who have been working without contracts for 2 years. And to them, it's a very important fight because if they were to lose the Cosmo, that's 2,000 more workers out of work. And they're sort of trying to build back to their peak of about 65,000-66,000 members. They're hovering right now about 50,000. So it sort of illustrates the fact that there are still a lot of union members out of work. And the Cosmo has been fighting to stay there. So
The workers, the Cosmo, they're still working. They're just not organized under the culinary, right?
They're still working. That's the situation. They don't have contracts. They don't have health care contributions. They don't have 40-hour work week guarantees. They don't have job security. They want a successorship clause because Deutsche Bank, the company that owns the Cosmopolitan, has been struggling financially since it opened in 2010. And there's been talks of it being on the market. And they want to guarantee that if it's sold to a buyer, they will have a guaranteed contract, which they don't have yet. So they're trying to fight for that. So those are sort of the main issues that they're fighting for.
And now, so taking a step back, so the workers, they did a card check, right, and voted to unionize,
yeah.
Right? And now the negotiations have been going on for 2 years, or how long?
They've been going on for 2 years, but they have stalled. Every story that I've written about six or seven of them focused on these protests. Cosmopolitan says that they are still working in good faith with the union, although my own opinion of the matter is that not much is really happening at all. The culinary is sort of alone, and they're sort of they're just trying to stay relevant with their numbers. But Deutsche Bank has been very quiet on the matter. So is
Culinary supposing that Deutsche Bank is just stalling so that they can sell it without a union contract on the books?
That's their argument. Unite Here came out with a statement last week, I believe, that said...
That's the Culinary's, the parent organization, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Their parent organization came out and said that this is, Deutsche Bank doesn't care, essentially, which reflects badly on their ability to play a role in a community. Why would anybody want to come here, they say, if the leaders of this resort don't care about the workers that they've employed? So they've been very hard pressed by the Culinary, and the Culinary doesn't seem to have any plans to quit. I mean, they just recently decided to do weekly protests, Fridays and Saturdays, until something happens. These protests that happen on the weekends now, they're not as big as the ones that have blocked Las Vegas Boulevard, but it's just a way to keep the pressure up. So,
I had a chance to go over to the Culinary headquarters the other week in Las Vegas, and they have posters that. Sort of like a walk down. It's almost like a museum in there. You can see the huge strikes, the crowds of people who protested and marched in the 90s, yeah, and the 80s. What's it look like today? Are there thousands of people? What are these protests like?
You don't see the big labor strikes anymore. And I don't know if that's out of a necessity to work or if it's just. The fact that they don't have enough people to do it, but the protests have typically included 2,000 to 3,000 people, depending on whether they have help from other unions in town for conventions. They recently had the Asian Pacific Americas Americans Labor Union with them, the California School Employees Association, but by themselves they generally drum up about 2,000 people. The Frontier Strike, which was the longest strike in history, lasted something like 6 years. And at the end of that, not everybody went back to their jobs. A lot of them sacrificed their jobs. Some of them just had to go back to work out of necessity. As I say again, the Culinary, I think, is trying to stay relevant on the Strip in an environment that's changing more and more to this corporate structure, which historically corporate structures don't really bode well for unions. So it's very interesting.
And what in terms of regulations, I mean, if these negotiations are going on for 2 years, can the National Labor Relations Board step in? I mean, what can anything be done to get the contract? I mean, once they vote for a union, can this just go on forever?
I think it can go on forever. I mean, the Frontier Strike illustrated that. I mean, it lasted more than half a decade. So there really isn't much padding available for the Culinary. They are on their own. And quite frankly, I think they've done pretty well at sustaining their numbers since they started back in 1939, I think it was. So they're really on their own. So,
well, the Culinary, I know it's sort of been the almost cliche thing to say about Vegas, that you can have a middle-class job and support yourself or your family by working at one of the Strip casinos here. Is that what's kind of at stake here, the continuation of that?
Yeah, absolutely. They call it the Las Vegas dream, and it's people who come here from all corners of the country as a husband and wife, with kids. Both of them, the parents being able to work at a casino, most likely separate casinos, and bring in a decent paycheck every week and support a family. The Culinary's financial stance here as far as family goes is very good compared to other markets in the United States. I mean, a chef here, a service worker here makes almost double what a service worker would make in Illinois, say. So it's definitely a draw. And it's something that they do not want to lose, so they're going to.
And in Las Vegas, the cost of living is even less than in Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
Is that disparity, I guess, or that benefit here, I guess, for the Las Vegas workers, can you chalk that all up to the influence of labor and organized labor?
I think you possibly could. I mean, if you were a worker in Chicago, you'd be paying $5 a gallon of gas. Out here, it's still less than $4. And it's just a testament to the area and sort of their influence. I mean, there's a reason they've stayed. So, you know.
How do you see the morale in the culinary right now? You know, you mentioned some of their membership levels dropping a little bit. The union members still, do you get the sense that they still feel relevant?
Yeah, they definitely feel relevant. They definitely feel relevant. I mean, when they stand together in a group that's exceeding 2,000, they definitely feel like they have the support. The people who work at the Cosmo are obviously, they feel disenfranchised and their moods aren't as good. But the people that I've talked to are generally very happy to be a part of the union. Granted, there are people who likely aren't happy, but they're a little bit harder to find. So,
you know, and what about the culinary's campaigns with other? I mean, there's other casinos, right? Stations Casinos, most notably, that they haven't worked out a deal with. And what is the culinary doing to put pressure on these casinos that aren't unionizing?
Well, the most notable one is the culinary's letter sending campaign, which is a direct attack on Station Casinos. Station Casinos has been hard nosed in resisting anything that has to do with the union for years and years and years. And the culinary basically sends letters to event planners that are planning to hold conferences or conventions in town, basically warning them that there might be a labor dispute here. And in the past, people have canceled their events because of this. And it has spurred Station to start radio and TV advertisements of their own, basically attacking the union, saying that you know, you don't need it, and then the union coming back with their own campaigns. Right now, they have a website, VegasTravelAlert.com, which warns potential visitors of possible labor strikes. So they're very active on social media and as far as bodies on the strip. I mean, but those are the main ones. So.
I'm curious. What's the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority? What do they think about a website like that that could, I guess, deter business or make businesses like have some insecurity about coming to Vegas for a convention if they think there might be a labor dispute at any moment?
The Conventions Authority, I've asked them that question, and the answer was no comment. Because the idea,
not surprising.
The idea is, and I've talked to lawyers about this same subject, the idea is if you're a convention planner coming to Las Vegas, you're a sophisticated human being. You could figure it out for yourself that it's going to be a risk to come here. So that's sort of the idea. If you're going to plan something in Las Vegas and you were doing a pros and cons list, one of the cons would be the culinary union. I mean, that's just the truth of it, because if you need to travel, there's a chance that you will get stuck in traffic, or you're going to run into people who are chanting through megaphones and things like this. So it's something that you have to expect in Vegas. It goes back to what you said, culinary sort of become the cliche. It's very much a part of Las Vegas. So,
all right. I guess on that somber note, we'll have to leave it there, Ed. Thanks today for joining us. You've been listening to Neon Eden with Tobin LePin and myself, Andrew Doman. Our producer is Steven Zeller. Tune in next week on KUNV 91.5. Thank you.